As Thanksgiving and the holidays arrive, while the year comes to a close, we're taking a look back at some of the most compelling conversations of 2023 on the Hidden Killers podcast.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast.
The Hidden Killers podcast.
With Tony Bruschi.
Joni Johnston is with us. We're breaking down the Chad and Lori Daybell story as jury selection continues to move forward this week. Joni, a clinical and forensic psychologist, I thank you, number one, for being here. Let's talk about another relationship that Lori had, and that's the curious one with her brother, Alex Cox. It's one that's been kind of marred with suspicion of it being more than just your healthy brother-sister relationship. The ex-wife, I believe, of Alec had spoke, or Alex has spoken up several times, talking about the bizarre behavior the two of them had, sometimes going as far as almost like simulating sexual acts together. And then they just laugh about it like, that's what brothers and sisters do. Obviously not healthy ones. How far do you think that relationship actually went?
Well, that's a hard one, Tony. I mean, I don't want to speculate on sexual abuse, for example, because we don't know.
Sure.
We don't know. I will say that when you look at some of the things that other people describe, such as what you just described, mm-hmm. you know, I don't think most siblings behave in that way.
Yeah.
I don't think most siblings move to be with the other sibling necessarily. I certainly don't think most siblings are willing to assault somebody else on behalf of their sister or kill somebody potentially on behalf of their sister. Mm-hmm. So I think we can, you know, based on what people or other people are describing, based on what we know happened, we can certainly say this is not a typical brother-sister relationship.
Yeah.
And there seemed to, at the very minimum, be some kind of poor sexual boundaries
yeah.
between the two of them. Now, what this meant in the privacy of their home growing up, we don't know.
Mm-hmm. But obviously, I mean, and we don't know, and it's hard to speculate, but you know, had there been more abuse there, if there was, which we don't know about, I mean, that could certainly lead to very, you know, deluded thinking, would it not in some ways?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, absolutely. You know, when you look at any kind of childhood trauma or potential childhood trauma, whether it's physical abuse or sexual abuse, et cetera, I mean, of course, that has a lasting impact on people, particularly if they don't get treatment for it mm-hmm. and get help for it. And it certainly sounds like that relationship and the some of the dynamics in terms of the enmeshment, in terms of emotional enmeshment I'm talking about here, seem to have, you know, continued until Alex's death.
Yeah, I mean, it's very questionable. And I do wonder about his death and what was the reason for it. It's still, I believe, labeled as like natural. Is it not? I don't believe they've done an official investigation into his death as of this moment.
Now, I am really parroting what I've read at this
yeah.
point, but I will tell you that I've read what you have, that it was
yeah.
it was deemed a natural death, a pulmonary embolism.
Yeah.
They found a blood clot in his lungs. Then I also read recently they found Narcan in his system.
Oh, well, there you go.
you know, which is a drug that's often used to combat opiate
yeah.
overdose. So, you know, I think there probably isn't a person who's heard anything about this case that doesn't kind of go, how could this be a natural death?
Yeah.
You know, given the circumstances. So is more going to come to light? I don't know. But I do know that it is very, very convenient and very fortunate for both Chad and Lori that Alex is out of the picture, because he certainly can be presented as the fall guy.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, based on some of the things that his wife said, he apparently anticipated, maybe not his death, I don't know, but certainly anticipated that he might be the fall guy at some point.
Yeah. And that's what I wonder about. That's kind of what I think I'm trying to ask is what was the, you know, I know it's saying natural death, but let's assume for a moment that they find out later on it's not. Through yeah. some sort of toxicology or whatever. What would the purpose of him being out of the picture being? And I think you just answered that, because he had the power to expose. He also had the possibility of trying to be the fall guy, but the fall guy can't speak anymore if he's dead.
Absolutely. And from what, you know, again, other people have said
yeah.
about Alex Cox is that he seemed to be a true believer.
Mm-hmm.
In this situation. And so let's say he starts having doubts about whether he is doing the will of God.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. I mean, who stands to lose in that situation? Chad and Lori, especially if he starts, if he starts doubting what he's being told, if he starts seeing a pattern here that, gee, you know, from a religious standpoint, it seems kind of convenient that people who are in Chad and Lori's way of being together and being happy and free are the ones who end up dead. That seems very convenient from a religious standpoint. You know, God is really working in their favor, right?
Well, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, absolutely. I mean, they have a lot to gain and little to lose by him disappearing off the face of the earth.
Well, if you look at their track record, anytime somebody was kind of in the way or could be a hindrance, suddenly Chad was hearing a voice from God telling him that this person's a zombie or this person is a this or that. That's where we get, you know, Ned Schneider and all of those sort of bizarre characters into this story. So it does make sense that at some point there was that moment of he's potentially a liability for us. So now he must be evil too and bad. It's just bizarre that they have, because in some ways it's almost, is it a moment of lucidity where they realize, well, in order to keep this storyline going the way we want it, we kind of got to get rid of this person. And then the justification being they're a zombie. But I mean, I guess it's the cart before the horse. What clicks in their mind first? Do they just immediately go to, this person's making me uncomfortable, this person could be a liability, they must be a zombie? Or is it, this person is in the way, I'm going to call them a zombie because it goes along with the story? It's curious.
It is curious. And I mean, I think many of us would give a lot to know, you know, like, because there's just such an interesting paradox in some respects, Tony, in that on the one hand, you have this kind of pervasive religious kind of fervor that overlays everything. Uh-huh. And then you have this very practical, like very clear motives. I mean, calling the insurance company.
Yeah, exactly.
After Charles Vallow dies, right? I mean, you have this, you know, collecting Tammy's insurance. I mean, you have this real practical kind of, okay, this is benefiting us financially.
And like Chad trying to find a deal at the funeral home. That was another one where it's like, well, you know, just something cheap. And they knew what they were doing. She knew how to turn it on and off in police interrogation. She didn't bring up zombies there because she knew that would have gotten her locked up very quickly. It was very selective. It was selectively who they would and wouldn't say these things to. But one could almost understand that, well, if you do have this belief system, you sometimes just have to know, you know, when and where to be talking about it. I guess with anybody in their religion,
I think that is such an important point, because even though Idaho doesn't have the insanity defense, so that's not going to be an issue, although it may be at sentencing in terms of, you know, mitigation and those kinds of things. But I think when you're looking at mental illness versus insanity, I think what you're talking about really speaks to the fact that, let's just say that Lori believed everything that Chad said. The fact that she's very selective, right? As she goes and she presents herself well when she has her psych evaluation. I mean, there is clear evidence that she's aware of what she's doing. She's able to monitor it and present certain ways to different people. She hides things. She lies for self-serving purposes. I mean, these are things that do not argue for somebody who does not know the difference between right or wrong, no matter what they believe.
And then you talk to her and you hear the things that come out of her mouth. And it seems like this utter true believer in the insanity, but able to turn it on and off. I think that's what's just so fascinating about this, because her character is such an enigma. It's not an easy one to understand. And nobody who has, you know, these sort of, whether it's a mental illness or a disorder, they're not easy. But sometimes there's some framework. You can kind of go, okay, I get how this is going to go. With her, you don't. It's really, truly a crapshoot every time.
Yeah, she's very interesting in many respects. I mean, it is interesting that, you know, that many of the people who are close to her, you know, really do describe her as this different person before she met Chad. And yet, like I said, when you step back and you look at some of the things that happened in her previous relationships, you know, I'm not convinced necessarily that she was this completely different person. She certainly was, in terms of, she didn't, you know, necessarily act on things, but her brother did.
Yep.
So I think it's not as black and white as I think some people want it to be in terms of her like transformation into this dark person once she meets Chad Daybell.
we're starting to speculate on the possibility of Chad flipping on her. And if you were to do that in her trial, my thing I've been saying is I don't think she could handle it. I think if you want to end the trial very quickly, have Chad go and testify if he's willing to do so against her. I don't think she'd stay. She'd be mentally competent to continue. I don't think she could aid in her own defense at that point. Because in my opinion, I just think that would push a button. We're already dealing with somebody who's been deemed not competent a few times. Especially if she still believes in everything that he's saying. If suddenly he shows up on the stand and is like, "Nope, I was wrong, and here's what happened," and I don't know. I mean, that would be, I think, a fairly traumatizing thing.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting to see what her defense does, at this trial. I think there's certainly some speculation, and understandably so, that they will, even though it's not, there's not an insanity defense in Idaho. I think there will probably be a lot of attempts to, present her as somebody who was, psychotic, and somebody who was just completely under the influence of Chad Daybell. It'll be interesting to see if she testifies.
Without a doubt. Will this, in your opinion, we'll just wrap it on this, will this trial make it to the end with her, with it being able to continue, with her being competent enough for it to last the entire, however many weeks this is?
I would say yes.
Okay.
I think she will be able to do that. Now, of course, you're right. It depends on what happens. I have no idea how she would react if Chad Daybell got on the stand to testify against her. His trial is coming down the road.
Yeah.
So we don't know what's going on behind the scenes. It's interesting that he's the one who wanted to sever the trials, and that doesn't bode well for Lori. Although I guess it could potentially help both of them, because they can both now try to throw Alex under the bus and say, I didn't know what was going on, or I thought, I didn't really think he would do it, or whatever. Yeah.
I think it's safe to say, I don't think anyone can predict what's going to happen in this, as with their entire story.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast
with Tony Bruschi.
Joan E. Johnston, clinical and forensic psychologist. Thank you so much for joining us. Dr. JoanieJohnston.com is her website to go check out her work. We do greatly appreciate that conversation. If you like the show, press subscribe wherever you download podcasts. You don't miss any of the cases we're following for you right here. I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.
Normally in these ads, you expect somebody to ask you to buy something, but this is something different. I'm Julian Barnes, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm a national security reporter, and that means I'm reporting on military operations. These are fast-paced, quickly moving situations. What exactly is happening on the ground is often shrouded in mystery, but we turn to trusted sources, satellite imagery, and expertise built up over years in order to ferret out the facts that wouldn't otherwise come to light. I'm here to ask you to seek out a news source that does firsthand fact-based reporting. If it's your local paper, great. If it's the Times, thank you. Because where you go for your information matters.